Okay, we have some questions from some readers. Ted, I'm having a dry spell and can't seem to get any sweet poontang. I know you are the master player, so any advice would be greatly appreciated.
Well, my first alert in this modern day and age would be personal hygiene. I see a lot of guys out there that don't carry themselves with confidence and with a projected conscientiousness. I see a lot of people with bad posture. I see a lot of guys that just don't look clean, don't look, you know, well-groomed, don't carry themselves with pride. The pandemic of obesity is certainly a manifestation of that horrible condition. So I would say women are always interested in a man of authority, decency, goodwill, friendliness, but none of that will be determined until you are clean, well-groomed, and you carry yourself with good posture and always be as polite as possible. But I don't find that just as a wang-dang consideration, but just as a consideration for being, you know, friendly and courteous to your fellow man, both male and female.
This next question comes from the Dude 5. Ted, you are the man. Serious. Nobody comes close. My question is this. Have you ever played a nude fest? My wife and I are practicing nudists. We saw Foreigner and Molly Hatchet played a nudist fest some years back, and it was a very emotional experience. Would you consider playing one? Or have you already? Thank you.
You know, my mind, I'm starting to get a headache right now, Joe. So does that mean that Molly Hatchet was nude? Because that would be very, very ugly.
I don't know.
Dear God in heaven, I want to rid my mind of that thought as fast as I possibly can. You know, I love nudity, as long as everybody's skinny. And my life certainly... Well, I don't even know how to articulate this without Mrs. Nugent sapping me with that training collar. But I've done my share of private invitation nude tests throughout my life. And because Mrs. Nugent is the most beautiful, skinny, svelte, sexual beast to ever walk planet Earth, she and I celebrate many nude festivals, shall we say. But I would not play a public nude event, because I would be afraid that blubber would show up and completely neuter my otherwise very, very robust guitar playing style.
The same person asks another question. Ted, as I mentioned before, I'm a practicing nudist, which means I'm pretty much a pacifist. But I'm curious to know, have you ever killed an animal with your bare hands?
I have killed an animal with my bare hands. I was guiding a person one time, and they had shot a wild boar, and when they retracted, we thought it was a dead animal. When I got upon it, it lurched forward, and I didn't have anything handy, and I literally pummeled it back to the ground and finished off with a rock.
Oh, my.
Very intense. I think you can hear that snarling guitar reenactment in the song Raw Dogs and War Hogs on the Crave Man record.
Oh, my word. Well, I don't know what that has to do with the guy being a practicing nudist, but...
Well, again, a pacifist, I guarantee. This needs to be shared, Joe. People will pretend to be a pacifist and claim that they're not responsible for any pain or suffering because all they eat is tofu. You with me?
Yeah.
When, in fact, the very production, and therefore complicity, in the production of tofu is responsible for more death of living creatures than any activity available to mankind. And if anybody's confused by that statement, they would have to just check out the agri practices by which soybeans are grown. And of course, we all know that those giant tractors have discs and plows that crush, mutilate, dismember, and kill every ground squirrel, every rabbit, every shrew, every vole, every snake, every bird, every turtle. Every animal in that field will be annihilated before those beans can be planted. And everybody who buys the salad with that bean product in it has the blood of those animals on their hand. And there's nothing wrong with that, because we do need salads, and we do need tofu, and we do need beans for gazillions of uses. But to pretend pretend that you're not complicit, I guess you would have to take mind-altering chemicals to protect that denial.
Here's another question. Ted, do you have any hearing left? Is tinnitus an issue? What do you and your band use for hearing protection on stage?
Well, this is a very important issue. My left ear is terribly damaged because I've always worn an earplug in my right ear since the mid-60s, because the Birdland through all those Fender amps was so loud and so piercing because of the brittleness of the Fender Twin Reverbs high-end. So I got smart and I wore an earplug in my right ear. But my hearing damage is mostly attributable to the firearms enjoyment of my life. I have probably touched off more rounds than the 3rd Battalion in World War II storming Normandy. And I didn't get smart to wear hearing protection till the mid-70s. And so I did a lot of damage to my hearing prior to that. But today it's important to note that not only should musicians and shooters protect their hearing with every decibel endeavor that goes beyond safety considerations, but that my stage volume today, Joe, is probably a tenth of what it used to be. I merely turn up my array of PV amplifiers so that the sound is perfect, crisp, and authoritative, but it's at the threshold of feedback for the Birdland, which happens to be quite quiet. And then we let the PA project the maximum volume dynamic needed for the given facility.
This is actually one of my own questions, but what's changed the most about your act over the years?
I would like to think that very little change has occurred, but rather the honing of its specific efficiency. And that is that the rhythm and blues and the James Brown and Bo Diddley and Chuck Berry influences have remained pure, but that we focused and got smarter on how to best project and implement those tightness factors, those rhythm cohesive considerations of our black heroes. Plus, I've gotten funnier on stage, you know. There's so many funny things going on in this world, and so many stupid things going on in this world that someone can certainly have fun with them. I've not only been influenced by the great music masters of my life, but also by the great humorists from Richard Pryor and Sam Kinison and those incredible comedians. So I have actually weaved in some of that Sam Kinison, Richard Pryor, Lenny Bruce humor into my acts, which based on the record-breaking smiles per capita at my concerts is being enjoyed by everybody.
I have to ask, you know, you're known for doing such intense music, you know, but during your tenure in Damn Yankees, you know, you did some ballads, some power ballads. You couldn't have really been happy doing that, right? I mean, you're the Nuge.
Oh, I was overjoyed. I don't see, I'm spoiled, and I've always been my own boss since I was a teenager. And though I'm always a team player, and I give deep, deep, heartfelt consideration to the collaborative offerings of my musical compatriots, I decided to do the Damn Yankees. I jammed with Tommy Shaw and Jack Blades and Michael Cardelloni and went, boy, this is musically stimulating. This is extremely gratifying on a musical level. And remember, I played all the Motown songs. I played My Girl. I still play My Girl. I play Losing You by the Temptations. I play James Brown and just Wilson Pickett. And, I Put a Spell on You by Screaming Jay Hawkins, which though it peaks at an intensity, so does High Enough by the Damn Yankees. So I watched Zach Wilde express his confusion and heartbreak that Ted Nugent would dare allow the Motor City Madman and the Master of Stranglehold perform in what he called the wussy band of the Damn Yankees. And I think Zach's constant pursuit of inebriation is more responsible for that statement than any real musical considerations. I loved every minute of the Damn Yankees music. You watch the YouTube where I unleash that Paul Reed Smith during Come Again and during High Enough and during Don't Tread on Me. and during those various Damn Yankee songs, and even the guitar solo sections that I was given in Damn Yankees on the PRS, that PRS, Damn Yankees Adventure, provided me unlimited expansion of my guitar vision, of my guitar capabilities, of my guitar palette, my guitar smorgasbord, my guitar tapestry. That was nothing but a positive experience for me. And I can't wait for the day that the four of us can get back together again, because I loved every minute of it.
Two last questions.
Sure.
How many animal heads have you collected over the years?
Oh, my goodness. Animal heads are fascinating in that they are the ultimate reverential salute to this magnificent beast that is a gift to feed my family. And some of these animals are just so stunning, much like the hieroglyphics, if that's the proper term, of the animal artwork on caveman walls of legend and of yore. The animal head on the wall is one of deep respect to the beauty and the sacrifice of that animal to provide my family sustenance. I don't mount very many animals by taxidermists, even though the artwork is nothing short of spectacular. But I've certainly mounted hundreds and hundreds of heads over the years of the, not just the giant record pipe stags of gargantuan antler beauty, but also the young female of the species that represented a time with a terminally ill child, or a legless marine who accompanied me on a hunt, or the first deer I ever shot with my bow and arrow on that beautiful October 7th day in 1969. That doe is still mounted on my wall, even though it's not the kind of animal you would think you would mount, because as I made myself healthier by the pursuit and understanding of that beast, and then made my body healthier by the channeling of that pure protein, when I gaze upon that head on my cabin wall, it is a reminder that these animals are indeed a renewable, sustainable gift that provide me life. And most of the animals that I do have mounted, I now autograph and remark and auction off for charities.
On a different note, if you could physically remove one band from this planet, what would it be?
Well, I'm such a loving guy, Joe. I would just let them all keep going. You know what I mean?
There must be somebody.
But there is a thorn in my foot that it's embarrassing and it's repugnant. And that is that in the same so-called Rock and Roll Hall of Fame that the gods of thunder reside, Bo Diddley, Chuck Berry, James Brown, Wilson Pickett, Sam and Dave, Aerosmith, ZZ Top, Van Halen, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, the Masters, that some brain-dead buffoon would dare allow Patti Smith into that hall is sacrilege. And I'd rather that you just stayed in a LSD recovery island and spouted her mindless, soulless, so-called poetry. Because for her to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you might as well just piss on the grave of James Brown, and I'm offended by that.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Same thing goes for Grandmaster Flash. How dare they be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Okay. Well, there you have it.
There you have it.
Hey, Ted, thank you very much for spending some time with me.
My pleasure, Joe. God bless you guys, man. And God bless all those musicians out there who put their heart and soul into expressing themselves accurately and honestly and uninhibitedly, dare I say, irreverently and defiantly on their instruments. All that stuff is important, and I salute them all for being the best that they can be.
It's been a pleasure. This is Joe Basso for Music Radar, the place for music makers, and I've been speaking with Ted Nugent. Again, thank you very much, man.
Godspeed. God bless America, man.
Take care, man.
Thanks, Joe.
Bye-bye.